Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. I'm Joe McCann, and he is Phil Bush. Hey, Phil, how's it going? Been a long week without Marquette basketball.
It's been nine of the longest days of my life.
Yeah, it's been a very long break for Marquette, but not necessarily uneventful. We're going to talk about the win over DePaul, which seems like it was a month ago. We're going to just touch on that briefly because it's pretty quick. And then we're going to look ahead to a very big week for Marquette, taking on two of the top 10 teams in the country. But first, I want to talk about the news that kind of, at least that broke late last week, Phil, that kind of sent Marquette Twitter into a bit of a buzz. It's both minor news and major news that Joey Hauser is now on campus. I'm assuming most of you probably know by now that Joey Hauser, Sam's younger brother, Marquette's top recruit in the 2018 class, he graduated high school in December. He's wrapping up classes, taking his final exams, and I guess he is now on campus and taking classes at Marquette. So he is officially on the roster. Now, for those of you who don't know, he is not going to play this year. He broke his ankle, or he needed ankle surgery, and he's out for the season. So he was going to miss the rest of his high school season anyway. But, Phil, this is both minor and major in that it has really no effect on this season, but it's great that Joey is now on campus and with the team, and he will be doing his rehab with Marquette's doctors, Marquette's trainers now. So that, I think, is significant.
Yeah, like you said, it has no impact on this season other than, you know, it'll be interesting to have Joey on the bench for Sam and how, if anything, that helps or hurts Sam as he's going through things. You know, having your little brother around can be annoying at times. We both know
you
that.
You and I would both know.
Yeah, exactly. But it's definitely major for next season, because not only is it that he can get, you know, kind of access to not that, you know, he wouldn't get good healthcare where he was in high school, but certainly you're getting Marquette, who's got a vested interest in him getting top-notch medical care and having Todd Smith working on him both from a rehab perspective and from a muscle-building perspective. That's all good. The other thing that I really find appealing about having him on the roster this season is he gets to travel with the team, I believe.
Because it's a voluntary redshirt, so therefore he could travel. He can't travel with the team because technically he could enter a game, much like Ike Eke could have. Although Ike, by the way, had back surgery, so well wishes to him as he's recovering. But should be good to go for next year. But when it's a voluntary redshirt, you can enter the game at any time and just burn your redshirt, as opposed to a mandatory redshirt, like say for Ed Morrow, who transferred, and in no situation could he enter a game this year. Therefore, that's why he could not travel with the team. But Joey, since it's a voluntary redshirt, he can travel with the team, because hypothetically he could enter the game, but he's definitely not going to because he's injured. So yeah, Joey will be on the bench for Wednesday's game at Xavier, I would assume.
Yeah, and I wonder if it'll be brought up by the broadcast team. I'm betting it will be, but it's kind of a unique situation. You see this a lot in college football.
Guys graduating December, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, graduating December and being – but you never see them play in a – you know, there's not football game. It's not like they play in a bowl game or something like that. So this is interesting that he's going to be on the bench. De Silva with Kansas just reclassified and jumped right into a game. I don't know how
Silvio
you get some –
Yeah, Silvio De Sosa, who was actually featured on Sports Stars of Tomorrow, my show, by the way. Please watch. I work really hard on it.
he
was playing in IMG Academy back in December. And yeah, he's playing for Kansas right now. So it does happen. It's rare. Because most often, when you think about it, most high school basketball players, they're focused on their seasons. They want to win one more state championship. They want to be a McDonald's All-American. They want to be a Jordan Brand All-American. They want to be the Gatorade Player of the Year, both in their state and nationally. And you can't do any of that stuff if you leave in December. But say at an academy like IMG Academy, where Silvio De Sosa was, yeah, maybe there's really no harm in just go ahead and finish up your classes and getting on to college, because you're not playing for any state championships or anything. You're just you're playing for a mythical national championship. But this has actually happened before very recently. This a very similar situation 2 years ago, Phil. Dennis Smith Jr., who's now playing for the Dallas Mavericks, went to NC State. some of you may know, but some of you may not, he tore his ACL in the summer before his senior year of high school. And so he knew he was going to miss his entire senior year of high school. So he wrapped up classes and enrolled in NC State just in the second semester of what would have been his senior year of high school, much like Joey's doing. Joey knew he was not going to play his senior year at Stevens Point Area High School. I'm sure back in, you know, September, October, he was planning on trying to lead Spash to another state title, try to be Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Wisconsin, maybe try to be a McDonald's All-American, but since the fact that he hasn't played this year, all that stuff was out the window, so it made perfect sense. Do what Dennis Smith Jr. did, wrap up classes, let's go ahead and start the next chapter of my life as a college basketball player, rehab with trainers. Like you said, Phil, not that he wouldn't have gotten good care at whatever his doctor or personal trainer was near his hometown, but now he's working with guys men and women whose top priority is student-athletes. And like I said, like you said, Phil, Marquette has a very vested interest in Joey's future, so he is going to be like one of their top patients, if not their top patient. And like, he doesn't have to schedule his rehab around like a mandatory 7 hours at high school like maybe he would have had to do at high school. He probably can, you know, take a class in the morning and then go over to the Al McGuire Center and get treatment or do a little rehab and then go back to class, so he can work with trainers and doctors a lot more. So this has been done before, and I think it obviously worked out well for Dennis Smith Jr., who's maybe a different type of athlete. He's a lottery pick, and he was projected to be a lottery pick when he was a junior in high school. But still, I think Dennis Smith Jr. is a good example of how it can really benefit a kid to do this. Dennis Smith got on campus with NC State, rehabbed with the team, traveled with the team, was hanging out with them. There were even rumblings that he was going to play that year, but like Joey's going to do, he redshirted. But I think he's a good example of how this could be very beneficial for Joey.
Yeah, absolutely. So unless you're a purist that says you have to go to your senior prom, there is, you know, zero downside to this for Joey. And there's zero downside for Marquette. It's all upside, right? Like I said, I mean, Joey will be a freshman. He'll be admittedly a redshirt freshman when he plays next season, but he will have, you know, team travel. He'll understand what the process is. It's almost like you're getting kind of a conditioned sophomore in terms of, you know, but as a true freshman, so to speak. It's kind of hard to articulate effectively, but he'll have a lot of experience.
It's not all going to be new to him.
Right.
I mean, he's going to get used to the routine of what it's like to be a college student athlete. That's why some of these kids go to places like Findlay Prep and IMG Academy, like because of all the travel and stuff like that. It's a much more college lifestyle. But in Joey's case, he's actually going to be on campus with his college team. He's going to go to film study. I'm sure he's familiar with a lot of the coaching concepts and everything that Wojo and his staff run. Now he gets to see it firsthand every day because he's going to be with the team in team meetings. He's going to be there at practice. I don't know how far away he's actually is from running or practicing, but he'll at least be there as Wojo is instructing the team and coming up with game plans and coming up with whatever offensive and defensive concepts he goes over at practice every day. So by the time, you know, he is ready to step on the court and is ready to start running and it is ready to start playing again, it's not going to be totally new to him. So he'll have just a little bit of seasoning when he finally takes the floor for the first time as a Golden Eagle next November.
Yeah, absolutely. Random question. Does he get a roommate? As someone who had a fair number of roommates their freshman year, like, will he have one? Do they find him a new one? How does this work?
I don't know. I guess, who was Hanif Cheatham's roommate?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know the roommate situation, but yeah, if there's an empty bed left available by Hanif Cheatham, he probably just moves right in there. And maybe you referenced me. Yeah, my freshman year, I had a couple roommates move out on me. I don't think it was my fault, but who knows? Maybe it was me. But I enjoyed stretching out and have the extra space. So whoever's been enjoying the extra space there, maybe they have to surrender it to Joey, because I would assume he'd room with Sam.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't want to room with my brother.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe it is best to just meet some of the other players and get to know some of the other guys. But yeah, I think it's cool. And I think a lot of people got Yeah, excited a little bit just knowing that Joey's on campus and he'll be with the team in the summer. You know, I mean, he's going to be with the team. He can knock a few classes out of the way, so that's always good, you know, to get ahead of the game as far as college credits and you know, being on track for graduating and things like that. But so he gets to get a few things out of the way, and that'll be you know, be good news. And Brendan Bailey, I also saw there was a release that, you know, he's returning from his Mormon mission in March, so he will be able to enroll at Marquette as soon as the summer session begins. So, because obviously Brendan Bailey is long done with high school, he doesn't have any classes or anything left to take. So as soon as Marquette can use that last scholarship on him and have him on campus, he's going to be there. So everyone right now who is scheduled to be with Marquette for next year will be on campus, I guess, late May, early June.
Yeah, late May.
Start using. Yeah, so everyone's going to be there, and inexperience should not be an excuse next year. I mean, everyone's going to be on campus for several months before they begin next year. So I that was good.
And yeah,
we'll see. Now, hopefully, like you said, nothing but positive, really, for having these guys in early and getting, you know, Joey a chance to rehab with Marquette's trainers. Ike Eke is going to be doing his rehab and getting, you know, getting his back right, and hopefully he'll be good to go for next fall as well. So, yeah.
Why not?
Things are shaping up.
Yeah, and I think it also speaks to the stability of the coaching staff and what's going on, right? I mean, Brendan Bailey, I mean, I don't think anyone would have judged if 2 years after he committed and he went out on a Mormon mission and kind of saw the world and got new perspective on life. I don't think anyone would have blinked if Brendan had said, you know what, I'm gonna look elsewhere. And I also think, I don't know that anyone would have blinked if the coaching staff had potentially moved on necessarily from, you know, saying, hey, we've got other needs.
That's all, one of those things they say, the cliche in recruiting is all about relationships. And
right.
They built a strong relationship with Brendan and his family. And I don't know the rules as far as how much. I think Wojo said they're able to maybe like exchange like an email or something every other month or something like that while he's on this mission. But it's not like they can't call him or text him every day, because that's just not how it works. You're supposed to be focused on your mission, as from what I understand about it. So, but they've maintained those relationships. I'm sure Wojo has been in touch with Brendan's family a bunch and talked to them regularly about him being on campus. So you just maintain those relationships, and if it's a kid you want on campus, then you stay in touch with the family and stay in touch with the kid as much as you can. And so the relationship is as strong as it was the day he committed and the day he signed when he finished up high school 2 years ago. So yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, you know, 2 years go by and you can change some things, but it's not like he's been able to take any visits.
That's true.
Or anything on this trip. I mean, he's when you're on the mission, that is your sole responsibility. So now he's ready to get back to basketball starting. Again, he'll be back. I don't know where he's been exactly. Where he could be anywhere in the world, but he'll be back home in March. And so I guess he can be back in touch with the coaching staff as much as possible then. There won't be any restrictions there. And then he'll be on campus in May. And he will begin the summer session.
Do you think Wojo's missives to him every other month were written like the ones from the memes for Andrew Luck, the dearest Martha,
dearest mother,
dearest mother? It was a harsh winter. Do you think that's what Wojo's emails were about?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't.
Well, that's
but it's
that's
fun
settled.
To think about.
Yeah,
fun
it
to
is.
Think about. How about we move on and talk a little bit about the current team, Phil, as we are seemingly very excited about next year's team. There's still plenty to like about this year's team. Let's touch on – it seems like the DePaul game was months ago, but it was just a week ago as we're recording this on Monday night. It was actually kind of an ugly game, but it was a win. I don't know about you, Phil. The one thing I did take away from that game is DePaul is still DePaul.
Yeah.
Harry Froehling, who, you know – well, I said on the previous podcast, maybe the game was moving a little fast for him. He looked overwhelmed. But he played pretty well in that game, rebounded the ball exceptionally well. So maybe he might be coming around just in time for the back half of Big East play.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, DePaul can make anyone look really good. So I'm not going to necessarily, you know, kind of go crazy about it. But The two takeaways. I think you're right about Harry Froehlich, especially the rebounding. Like, if there's one thing that he could really contribute to this team, it is to be an elite rebounder. I'm not saying he is elite, but if he can rebound at an elite level, that is definitely a skill set this team could use. They're not a bad rebounding team, but certainly improvement in that area will earn you some minutes. So that's one. I certainly think it's more than just how bad DePaul was. But I also think, you know, it was the fifth game in what, 11 days or 14 days or something like that. And I think it showed in the performance of the team. Both Rousey and Marcus Howard were off, and that's probably what you would expect from a jump shooting team who've played a lot of basketball over the previous amount of time. But it was good to get...
Yeah, I think Wojo said Howard was a little under the weather in that game.
Yeah, I think so,
hopefully
too.
He's been... taking lots of vitamin C over the last week or so, and he'll be good to go against Xavier.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, so it's nice to have like the team not play well at all and still secure a 20-point win against DePaul. Yes, it is DePaul, but I mean, when you don't play well and you still win, that's probably pretty reflective of the quality of your team, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And Marquette, you know, on a night when Rousey and Howard weren't at their best, and again, Will just said they were, at least Howard was under the weather a little bit, but you know, you have enough guys to contribute, and I don't know if the defense was great or DePaul was just putrid offensively, but they were able to win. I dare say they won that game on the defensive end of the floor.
It's probably both, actually.
Yeah. DePaul just took some awful shots, and that nothing was falling for them at all, but I not going to totally discount the way Marquette played defensively, and Marquette continues to make strides on the defensive end. I'm still not going to call them a good defensive team by any stretch of the imagination, but trending in the right direction, as it seems like we said it a few times already, as Elliott and Kane get more minutes, and maybe Froehlich too. I mean, his numbers don't qualify for leading the country in them just because he's only played just a few games, but his offensive and defensive rebounding percentages are staggeringly high when you look at him compared to the rest of the team. Like, he's grabbing 15% or 16% almost of the offensive rebounds that he's on the floor for, which would lead the team. Again, he's only played a few games. For the record, the leader on the team is Matt Helt at 9, and defensive rebounding percentages at 26. The leader on Marquette's team is actually Sam Hauser at 17. So that kind of gives you the idea of like how good Froehlich's percentages are, again, in limited minutes. But
you know, also those are like largely that against Big East teams, so it's not nothing.
No, yeah, that's right. It's not nothing. And it would be awesome if he can rebound at that rate against Xavier and Villanova coming up this week. But you know, when you can rebound like that, your defensive numbers are going to improve. And when you have a presence like that in the paint, and again, you know, the contributions you're getting from some of those freshmen has helped as well. So defense is trending in the right direction. It's going to need to continue to improve, but you know, we'll see how they do against two top 10 teams this week, Phil, in Xavier and Villanova. Marquette has obviously lost both of the previous matchups against these teams, Xavier at home and Villanova away. So now it's flopped this time around. We're going to Xavier on Wednesday and then hosting Villanova on Sunday. And for what it's worth, the spread in both of these games on KenPom are about the same, about 7 points. So 7 or 8 points. So about the same percentage-wise, same chances of winning both of these games. It's about 25%. What do you hope will change? Let's start with the Xavier game, Phil. What do you hope will change in the second go-around against Xavier?
Well, I think, one, the team knows, you know, if you remember, Xavier was the first game of Big East play. And I think, you know, especially with the younger players like Elliott and Sakar and Jamal Kane, it's probably a bit of a shock to the system, the speed and the physicality of Big East play. So, and it may have been, you know, they played well in that game against Xavier, but, you know, there's still going to be a little bit of that. So I think the players have adapted well to the Big East play, so I don't think there are going to be any surprises. I'm actually glad that the Xavier game's on the road, because with 9 days off, I could see if it's a home game, it'd be tough to really kind of get your mind right and get ready to jump in, because you're just kind of, you know, hanging out at home. But I think being on the road, you're kind of forced back into this. All right, I'm in the Big East. I'm playing basketball. I've got
back
a
heck of mode.
Yeah, yeah. Get back into the business mode. That's exactly right. So I just really hope that Marquette gets aggressive and just attacks Xavier right from the get go. I think that, if anything, will be the difference in the game on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the first game against Xavier, I mean, Xavier pretty much was in control most of the game. You know, Marquette hit a few shots late to make it a little bit closer, but, I mean, the win for Xavier was really not that much in doubt. But I guess I am looking forward to another round of Rousey and Makura smack-talking. This is going to be our last opportunity to see that. So I'm looking forward to see if there's going to be another confrontation between those two. But, you know, in the last game, Rousey had 31 points in the last game, so if he could duplicate that effort, that would be outstanding. That was one of the games when Howard was that prompted the Marcus Howard slump discussion. He was 1 of 8 from the field from three in that game. So that's something, obviously, certainly you would hope would turn around. But, you know, I'm definitely curious to see what kind of contributions Marquette's going to get from some of the other guys. That was actually the breakout game for Jamal Cain, you know, one of them anyway. He had, you know, he had 4 threes in that game that really got people kind of excited about him in the early going. But, you know, I think, it's going to have to be something on the interior, really, whether it's something from Froehling or something, you know, and see if he can continue to kind of come into his own and get used to the pace of Big East play and contribute the way he did against DePaul. Or maybe you get a little bit from Helt or a little bit from John, whether it's maybe offensively or maybe more defensively. But I mean, you've got to get some contributions from some other people other than the guards if you're going to go on the road and beat Xavier.
Yeah, absolutely. I it's a good point about Froehling. I mean, I guess Froehling played 20 minutes in the first matchup, actually played more minutes than Greg Elliott. I kind of remembered that the reverse of that. So, you know, maybe does Greg Elliott get matched up against Trayvon Blewett in a fair amount? Or, you know, does Froehling step up and help in the rebounding department? He had 8 against – man, I don't remember this at all. I don't remember Froehling have that kind of game. He had 8 rebounds against Xavier. So, I think it's going to be about the role players contributing. I would think, again, with fresh legs, Howard, Rousey, and Hauser are going to get theirs and get some good points out of them, but it's going to be about the role players stepping up and filling in on the gaps.
But yeah, I think one thing that maybe Marquette has kind of evolved into since that game is that this kind of idea of once one of Marquette's two guards, Rousey and Howard, get going, just kind of ride that guy and then bring in everyone else defensively around him. And if it means you kind of have to swap Rousey and Howard for the rest of the game, then that's what you do. Because I think that group of Kane, Annam, and Elliott have shown that they can contribute enough defensively that even if you're not getting as much offense from those guys, that if a guy like Rousey or Howard is hot again, that you can kind of let him kind of carry the offense when hopefully you just get a little bit from those other guys. But when you can have a strong defensive team out there with those three I mentioned and then, you know, pick whoever you want, whether it's Helt, John, or Froehling in the middle, then maybe you can slow down Xavier, who shot the ball fairly well in that game. I mean, they shot 61% from two in that game. So that was another game where opponents were getting to the basket a lot against Marquette. So maybe you can get a better defensive effort, keep Xavier out of the 90s this time around, and maybe you can, say get a win. I mean, you would love to go and get a win in this situation, so that way the pressure is totally off against Villanova. You're playing with house money for sure in that game. But I think that's one way – I think one way Marquette has evolved since this game is kind of that – maybe call it a closing lineup, maybe, when you've got the lead guard scoring and then just everyone else kind of playing defense.
Yeah. Are you concerned at all about Sakaar Amin's propensity to foul the last couple of games? Is that going to be a factor, do you think? Or is there enough, you know, because he...
Well, I think fouls are always going to be a factor on the road, and especially when you're a team that doesn't go to the line as much. You know, that's been a concern for Wojo, and it seems like other teams are getting to the line a lot more often, especially when you're playing a team like Xavier who has a guy like Blewett who's going to try to get to the basket. Makira's maybe a little bit more of a jump shooter, but he does play very aggressively, and he's big enough that he can try to get to the basket a little bit. And then they have some bigs that they'll go into every so often, whether it's O'Mara or Cantor. I don't think about Sakaar being in foul trouble too much. Maybe he's had his games where he's been in foul trouble, but no, I don't look at Sakaar as a liability. Maybe I'm wrong there. I'm not paying close enough attention, but no.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's other pieces that have developed, but I mean, it is somewhat troublesome. He's presumably the kind of the primary defensive stopper for Marquette, at least in the guard position, and so not having him would be tough. But you know, who knows? That could be just subject to how they're playing at any given time. So you know, we'll see what comes of it. I think the other thing we didn't touch on leading up to these games and didn't talk about with DePaul is how steady and consistent Sam Hauser has been. I think if he can be on track and you know, kind of put in a 15-20 point performance, I think that forces Xavier to adjust in ways that free up some of the other folks like a Marcus or a Rousey that maybe we didn't get that first time.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of singing the praises of Hauser in the last podcast, and it kind of carried into the DePaul game as well. But, you know, we had some fun in the last show talking about Matt Helt being the number one most efficient player in the country. By the way, as we're recording this, he still is number one, so there's that to keep an eye on. I don't think we're going to do another most efficient man in the country edition, at least not yet. Maybe we might keep. Maybe if he keeps this up and can do it through the regular season, maybe we'll do another installment. But, you know, Sam Hauser could catch him. You know, Sam is sixth in the country as we're recording this. I mean, Matt Helt's offensive rating is 141.1 per KenPom, and Sam Hauser's is 135.3. So it's not like that's not like a huge difference. There's only a few guys between the two of them. So, and I think, and obviously Sam has a much higher usage rate than Helt does. I mean, almost double, really, and more than twice as many shots taken as Helt does. So, the fact that he's been able to play that at that level of efficiency with a lot more possessions used, certainly speaks to what an efficient player he is and how valuable he is. And yeah, I think a lot of us in the preseason predictions that Paint Touch has put out had Sam Hauser as the team MVP, and he's kind of living up to that just because he can do so many things, whether it's offensively or defensively. He rebounds well, and for my money, he has got to be one of the best pick-and-pop players in all of college basketball just because of his size and shooting ability.
Well, and it's kind of crazy when you think about how good his season has been. There have been a number of wide open shots, threes that he's taken and missed. You know, if he made the easiest of threes, man, he would be easily the most efficient player in the league right now. So it's hard to, like you said, we talked about him last week. But when you look at it, he's kind of seemingly the straw that stirs the drink and is probably the most important player on the roster right now.
Yeah, he's like one of the guys who can, you can definitely depend on him every night. He's not going to blow up for 30 every night, but you know you're going to get significant contributions from Sam every night, whether he's hitting a few threes, whether he's rebounding the ball, or whether he's helping and guarding the other team's best big man. You're always going to get something from Sam. And, you know, he's leading the team in three-point percentage. He hasn't shot quite as many as Rousey and Howard have, but he's shot plenty of threes. I mean, he shot 121 threes this year, and he's shooting it almost 50%, 49.6, which is outstanding. That rate's 23rd in the country.
Yeah, so he's good.
So, yeah, he's good, is basically what I'm saying. And we have Sam 2.0 coming next year.
Yeah, and he's already on the bench, so he can yeah, either give or take pointers from Sam.
Exactly. So it'll be teams will be seeing double starting soon with Joey watching Sam hopefully continue to light it up against Xavier and Villanova. So we both broke down Xavier a little bit, Phil. Got a prediction for that one before we move on to Villanova?
Do
you want to do predictions at the end?
Yeah, let's do predictions at the end. Let's do predictions at the end.
All right, we'll do predictions at the end, and we'll give our prediction for the week. So, can the magic happen for a second straight year? For the second straight year, Villanova, no matter what happens between now and then, they will enter the Bradley Center as the number one team in the country, even no matter what happens against Providence for them on Tuesday, but hopefully they win for Marquette's sake, because it's always good when a team comes in hot. I hate to play Villanova pissed off for the second straight time, because it really wasn't very fun.
Correct. Plus, Providence losing helps Marquette in theory.
Yeah, I suppose it does. So obviously that was far and away the biggest win in the Wojo era, was taking down number one Villanova at home last year. So can it happen again? See, the thing is, unlike last year, I at least go into this game thinking Marquette can play with Villanova. Last year I would say there were no chance in hell that would ever happen. I would still say it's a very slim chance, kind of with KenPom on this, that Villanova, about an 8-point favorite, seems about right. But what's going to have to happen this time, Phil, as Marquette really, it was only a 10-point loss, but it really felt like a lot more than that when these teams played in Philadelphia the first time.
Defense.
Defense would be good.
And someone stopping Jalen Brunson, who nobody really has seemingly found a way to do.
Yeah. Jalen Brunson and Mikal Bridges, both in top 10 in the country on KenPom's Player of the Year watch. Brunson is 4, Bridges is 6. So two of the most efficient players in the country. Two of the most impactful players in the country. Villanova has the number one offense in the country. That seems good. They have the number 27 ranked defense in the country. That's solid as well. Number one in effective field goal percentage. Top 11 in turnover percentage on offense. Number 6 in free throw rate defensively. Top 10 in 2-point percentage. Top 10 in 3-point percentage. They're really good is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So they're like Sam, but really good.
Yeah, if you had to pick maybe 4 teams out of the country to possibly be the national champion, I think most people would pick Villanova as one of their 4. I mean, they, I think, for right now, are pretty clearly, to me, the number one team in the country, just because they are so steady on offense. They just had one game. They've had one game against Butler where Butler just went bananas from 3 and beat them at Hinkle. And they're not the best team in the country defensively, but they're by no stretch of the imagination bad. They're about a top 25 defense, so they're very solid. They're steady, and they got 2 players they can depend on, whether it's Brunson or Bridges, who can carry them to a victory. And they, as they always do, just have a host of role players around them. Marquette's improving defense is going to be put to the test. Captain Obvious making the statement there, but I don't know what else to say other than Marquette has to do what Butler did, shoot like crazy from 3, which Marquette will be happy to do. Just take 3s all day, and hopefully enough of them fall, and maybe you get lucky and shoot better than 50% from 3 on the game. And then, yeah, maybe it'll be interesting, but it's hard for me to be too optimistic against a team this good even at home.
Yeah, I mean... They're the top team in the country for a reason. Could you catch them in an off night, or could Marquette have a really great day? Absolutely, especially because Villanova's probably biggest defensive weakness is 3-point defense, so which happens to be a Marquette strength, obviously. So there is in theory a recipe for success there, but it doesn't necessarily mean it happens. I think what'll be great is it's a Sunday game, no football, noon game. The weather forecast, I don't think, shows like snow or anything like that. So you would think with the number one team in the country, and given what happened last year, the students are back in class, it should be a very full, very energetic Bradley Center. And who knows what can happen with that.
Yeah, I mean, if they're ever going to fill that place up this season, it's got to be for this game, right? Because everyone say, oh, well, I mean, they beat the number one team in the country last year. We got to – I mean, I got to be there again for the rematch this year. And maybe they can do it again this year. Maybe they'll storm the floor again. That'll be a lot of fun. So, yeah, I would hope that there's going to be a huge crowd there. I fully expect the students to be out in full force. And, you know, it's just going to be like what Al used to say, can they fill the corners, right? Can they just fill that top level of the arena and you know, get – close to capacity, get a sellout crowd there for Villanova. And for the number one team in the country, I mean, I don't know how you couldn't. I mean, you know, if you care about Marquette basketball at all and you're in the Milwaukee area and you have the means to pay for your own tickets, I mean, why wouldn't you want to go to this game?
Well,
it's going to be a great game. I mean, even if Marquette loses, it's going to be a thrilling game. Marquette is so fun to watch offensively. I don't know why you wouldn't enjoy watching Marquette, but when you're going up against a team that like Villanova, who could win the national championship, there are just so many reasons to go out and catch this game on Sunday.
Well, absolutely. And you know, you said it right. It is an exciting game. There's no reason not to be enthusiastic. And you know, Marquette is a good team, right? I mean, I don't know how to put it otherwise. Yeah, they're not a top 25 team yet, but darn it, they should be on the cusp. And if they win one out of these two, and you know, heck, if they knock off the Villanova team, they might get some serious votes for a top 25 contention. So this is a good team in Marquette that fans,
you know,
need to get
enthusiastic about. I'm kind of
getting
there and saying, you know, like, hey, this team's actually kind of good. Like, yeah, they're not a Final Four team. Let's not get crazy about it. But they're fun to watch. They're really enjoyable. Like,
right, and they're by far Wojo's best team, right? I mean, it's not even a question.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say, yeah. I mean, you know, if you listen to the Ion Sports podcast with Gary Parrish, he said a few weeks ago he thinks Marquette's his new, like, one of his new favorite teams in the country. He says he really enjoys watching them. Wally Zerbiak tweeted a few weeks ago. He said, if I was a young recruit, I would love to play for Coach Wojo. I love the way Marquette plays. They're fun to watch. They are fun to watch. Yeah, yeah. They give up a bunch of points on defense, but they're improving in that area. But they also score a bunch of points, and they don't just depend on one guy to do it. And, you know, leading credence to what you were saying, that this is Wojo's best team. Obviously, you know, Wojo's made the tournament once so far in his first three seasons. And right now they are trending in that direction on Bracket Matrix, which does a great job tracking all bracketologists across the internet. Marquette is currently appearing on 82 out of 90 brackets, so almost unanimous. They're trending around a 10 seed, so comfortably, I would say comfortably, and when I say comfortably, it means they're not going to Dayton if they were to get about a 10 seed, right? So they would, you know, be in a 7-10 game somewhere. And the thing is, even if they lose both of these games this week, I don't think that would necessarily knock them out of a bunch of bracket projections on the next one. Yeah, maybe that number of 82 brackets might drop into the 70s or into the 60s, but I still think they would be trending towards a tournament team even if they lose both of these games this week. And you know, even if that happens and you drop to 4-5 in conference play, the good news is you're halfway through the Big East season and five of the six toughest games are behind you.
Right.
Both games against Xavier and Villanova and one game against Seton Hall. Right. And you still got some tough games ahead. But, you know, if you're 4-5 in the very, very tough part of the schedule, hopefully you can get six wins in the back half, and then you get to 10 wins in the Big East, and that's plenty to get in the tournament.
Right, and 4 out of 5 on the, you know, 4-5 out of, in the first 9 games, like, that takes sustained capability, right? Like, you don't fluke necessarily into a 4-5 record in that very tough first half.
Yeah, exactly. When you're playing Xavier and Villanova twice in those first 9 games, yeah, I mean, it's kind of expected that you're going to lose all four of those games. And to say that you went 4-1 in the rest, that's pretty solid, man.
Yeah.
I don't think you can complain about that.
Right, exactly. And if you look at the way the schedule, you know, if they, like, you know, it doesn't help their ranking and people will be depressed if they lose both games. But in the grand scheme of things, they'll be 4-5. If you look at what's left on the record, I mean, they could very easily, go 7-2 down the stretch, and they're right back in contention, right? So this by no stretch of the imagination is this week a must win for either game, But
exactly, and actually, KenPom's projections does have them going 7-2, but they, with the adjusted projected record at 10-8. So if they do go 7-2, they would finish 11-7 in the conference, which, to me, that is a lock tournament team. But say even if you drop one of those 50-50 games down the stretch and go 10-8, I still think you're probably in.
I think you're way in. I mean, the Big Ten's down. It's another soft bubble, right?
Yeah. I still struggle with the term soft bubble. I think that phrase has been used every year since we went to 68. But I mean, I just more of the school of, hey, they have to take 68 teams.
Right. So, it's a fair point.
So somebody's getting in, and Marquette's resume right now is as good as any of those bubble teams trying to get into the tournament. And you know, like you said, Phil, even if they lose both these games, they would still be on track for about 10 wins in conference play, and it's not ridiculous to think they could go 7-2 down the stretch. Even though there are a lot of road games in February, they're against teams that Marquette should be able to beat. DePaul, Georgetown, St. John's, those are games you should probably win on the road. Although St. John's will be tough, but still, St. John's, if they're not going to have Marcus Lovett, they're not quite as good as they would have hoped to be this year. But
well, they haven't won a Big East game yet, have they?
Did they beat Georgetown last week? I missed that game. I wasn't paying attention.
It went to overtime. I know that. Georgetown won.
They lost. So yeah. Chris Mullins' boys are 0-8 in the Big East. Not looking much better this week. They got Creighton and Butler. So, yeesh.
Yeah. So of the like you said, we have more road games than home games. But other than Xavier, we've got a road game against Seton Hall, a road game against Creighton, neither of which are easy, but then road games against St. John's, Georgetown, and DePaul, which, quite frankly, are must wins. If you lose one of those games, based on the way the NCAA tournament is going to get built this year, then you almost have to win as a Xavier or a Villanova because of the way they're building the quadrants, right? So those are must-win games, but I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be able to win those games.
Yeah, I would say losing at St. John's wouldn't be catastrophic, but if they're, you know, 0-15 in the Big East when you get there, yeah, it probably would be catastrophic. It would probably be worse than losing to Georgetown at that point.
Probably worse than losing to DePaul, too.
Yeah, never lose to DePaul.
Ever.
Don't ever do it.
Hashtag DePauling.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of with you on that. That you know, I'm moving St. John's kind of into the must sweep category. That's a game that you should probably you should beat that team just because they're down, they're missing one of their best players, and so yeah, if you can rack up 6 wins against the bottom 3 teams, then you know you're more than halfway there to those 10 wins you need to probably secure an NCAA berth, and you've already got 2 of those. You would need 4 more outside of those, and you've already got 2 of them with Providence and Seton Hall. Then you just got to win. You just got to find a few more. Hopefully you can beat Butler at home. Hopefully you can beat Providence at home. You still got Creighton at home coming up. You got 2 games against Creighton. Those will be 2 of Marquette's tougher games coming up down the stretch. But yeah, so be excited for this team is what we're saying. They're very good, and don't jump off the bandwagon if they lose both these games this week. That's the more important point. So if you're maybe starting to just slowly kind of creep on the Marquette bandwagon, and maybe you're a, kind of a casual fan and say, maybe I'll pay a little bit of attention to this team and see how they do this week, don't, like, totally jump off if they lose both these games this week, because they'll still be on track to be a tournament team even if they drop both of them this week.
Right, and the whole goal is get this team into the tournament because, one, they're fun, and two, the way this team is constructed, they are the quintessential anything-could-happen tournament team, right? With the right matchups and hot shooting, man, they could do some damage. They could also fall out
in
the first
round.
Hopefully
you don't get
an
elite defensive team like South Carolina.
Yeah. It's almost like the committee did us no favors whatsoever.
Right. Yeah, like really. You know, then I felt better when South Carolina went to the Final Four. Say, all right, well, at least they did that same thing to everybody, and they just played out of their minds for 4 weeks or 2 weeks and for 4 games and got all the way to the Final Four. But, yeah, I mean, if you get a team that maybe has some deficiencies defensively in that first and even second round of the tournament, yeah, absolutely, Rousey and Howard can go bananas in the tournament, and then anything happens, right?
Right.
It's funny sometimes. It's not necessarily the right way to go, but, you know, when a coach gets to the Sweet 16 all of a sudden, no matter what happened in the regular season, he's a genius, right?
Right.
And even if like you limped into the tournament, or maybe even got into the tournament when you don't deserve it, if a coach does that, but then he wins two games, gets to the Sweet 16, genius. So, again, right or wrong, I don't know if that's the right way to go necessarily, but if you get in the tournament, make a little noise, that just totally changes the whole kind of perception of your program. And at least Marquette is putting themselves in a position to have a chance to do that, because, again, the way they're trending right now, they're certainly trending into the direction that they're going to be a tournament team. Not a lock yet, but they certainly have gotten enough wins in this first half of Big East play that they're going to have an opportunity to play their way in over the next month or so.
Well, and I have to say, I kind of hated the schedule when I first looked at it, but obviously, you know, going 4-3 in the first seven games has a way of making you feel better about the schedule. But this 9-game rest, assuming there's no rust, and they still have a bye week, so to speak. I believe there's a bye week in mid-February for them. But, you know, this 9-day rest kind of puts them in a good position to come out strong against Xavier and Villanova, maybe steal one of those, and then be in a position, you know, what they're playing Butler. Butler will be on a third game in a row road trip. You know, so there's some nice positioning that if Marquette just plays at the level it's demonstrated so far, it should be able to – I guess I'm going to say easily get to 10-8. So I think the floor is 10-8, and I think the ceiling is an 11-7 or, you know, 12-6 is unheard of, but they'd have to play some great basketball.
Yeah, and I hesitate to say this, but, you know, there hasn't been really that many games, at least since Froehlich's been with the team, that they just had an absolute stinker of a game.
Well, like, you could argue DePaul was.
Yeah, DePaul kind of might have been that game. Thankfully, DePaul played even worse, and you could just survive that stinker of a game. But yeah, I think for the most part, it's been a pretty consistent effort from Marquette, and then they just have happened to lose the games against the really good teams. Maybe the defensive performance wasn't quite there against Butler, and Butler just went crazy on them, and they just couldn't stop. They just couldn't stop Martin that day, but they. But yeah, I think what you get from Marquette has been mostly consistent, and if they continue to play like that, yeah, I do expect this team to have 10 wins. I do expect them to be in the tournament, and then it's just kind of like, all right, let's have some fun and see what can happen in March.
Yeah, well, and you could actually make the argument even the Providence game. I mean, Providence was without their forward. Who was out with the flu? But anyway, they were out without their best player. When Marquette played against
Bullock. Yeah, Bullock was out that game.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Bullock was out. Rodney Bullock was out. You know, so on paper, Marquette should have probably dominated that game, but it took a 52-point performance in overtime to beat Providence. So you could argue that was a less-than-stellar game from Marquette in total. So, you know, it's not been perfect, but, yeah, I mean, they're playing at high level. Are they a top 25 team? Yeah, I think they're on the cusp.
Even if they are, I really don't care that much. I care much more about being in bracket projections than I care about being in the top.
Well, you and I don't care, but Joe Schmo watching the local news sure as heck cares.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. To get those casual fans in there, right. Yeah, like having a number next to your name matters. Yes, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because you know what? The one thing I really miss, and I kind of felt it a little bit towards the end of that Seton Hall game, I kind of miss the Bradley Center being a home court where it was kind of tough to play. It hasn't been that way the last couple of years.
Yeah, and to be fair, I'm not sure the Bradley Center is necessarily designed to be a tough place to play.
No, I don't think so.
It's not like it's a college campus where, you know, there's an arena that was built just for a college team, and you have students right on top of the court. I mean, it's an NBA arena. It's for NBA fans, so it's not like it's an intimidating place to play. I'm not sure it ever really has been. When Dwayne Wade was playing there, obviously when you're getting, you know, 16,000 plus every single game, yeah, it's loud in there and it gets a little crazy, but I still wouldn't even put that against the elite home courts in college basketball if you're talking about, you know, Cameron Indoor and Fog Allen and Pauley Pavilion and place in, you know, Indiana and Louisville and places like that. But yeah, I get what you're saying. It would be nice to have, yeah, like fill the corners, or maybe not even fill the corners, but just have that top level just getting a little crowded, right, where you've got, you know, 15, 16,000 plus in there, and it's really loud in there.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's loud and it's enthusiastic. That's really what I'd like to see out. You know, that's what we should see against Villanova, and that's what the team kind of needs to see, that, you know, the fan base is coming and saying, you know what, you guys are pretty good. I'm going to come watch it. So that's the challenge to everyone who's probably not listening to this podcast because they're casual fans.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, the people who listen to this podcast, they always go.
Right.
And like I said, the students are going to be there. I know the students are going to – I mean, they're going to line up, and it's going to be loud. The student section is going to be full. It better be. And then, you know, you just got to get a few more of those casual fans in there who, you know, walk up and buy their tickets, right? And,
right.
Or, buy them online 2 or 3 days before the game. Say, hey, let's check out Marquette this weekend. They're playing the number one team. Hopefully you get those folks in there. And a win against Xavier would go a long way towards doing that, right?
You would think,
like,
yes.
It's like, oh, wow, there's a buzz about that. They just beat a top 10 team on the road, and now they're hosting the number one team in the country this weekend. We got to be there. We just have to be there. So and the thing is, I hope that's what happens, but I don't know if it's going to actually go that way because going on the road and getting a win at Xavier is going to be pretty tough. But I just hope no matter what happens against Xavier on Wednesday that it is just a loud, jam-packed arena for Villanova on Sunday. Yeah, it would be awesome to beat the number one team in the country 2 years in a row. That would lock up. But, I mean, Marquette would be in incredible position to the point that it would be a catastrophe for them to not make the tournament if they can pull off one of the wins this week.
Yeah, exactly. If they go 1-1 this week, I mean, you would have to be trying not to make the tournament probably.
Yeah, it would take quite a collapse for them to not make the tournament after that, to be perfectly honest.
So
they would have enough quality.
What are your prognostications for this week?
I'm just be a realist. I'm going to say Marquette's going to play very, very well. But I think they're going to lose both games just because you're playing against two really good teams. One of them's going to be on the road. For what's worth, I think they'll play closer. If you're going to use KenPom as Vegas and say that, you know, KenPom and Vegas kind of line up more or less within a point or two as far as the spreads. I'd say Marquette covers both games. I'd say they'll stay within 7 of Xavier and they'll stay within 8 of Villanova. But if you're asking me to pick both games, yeah, I would say Marquette loses both these games this week. But I would caution people, don't jump off the bandwagon if they lose both these games. They're still in great shape to make the tournament. I think, again, they're going to play well. I just think it's going to be a tough road to hoe both of those games because Xavier is a very good team and they'll be playing at home. And Villanova is the best team in the country, and they got two guys who can just make so many freaking plays and are hard to stop. So, my prognostication, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm going to say 2 losses this week.
Okay, well, I have debated this over and over again. There was a time earlier today where I stared at KenPom and I thought, my God, they could get 2 wins.
Oh,
I do
stop
not,
it.
I am not predicting that. I'm not predicting that. But I do think they go 1-1. I think if I gun to my head, if I had to pick one, I think they beat Xavier on the road. I think the 9 days rest and the fact that it's a road game actually helps kind of get them back in and back to business. I think they'll have fresh legs. And they
certainly should have that.
Yes. You know, and so I think Froehling's starting to get there. You've certainly got Elliott and some other players that can be impactful. I think they can get the win over Xavier, and then, you know, and then the Nova game is, and that the only reason I even gave a hint of going 2-0 is simply because going into that Nova game, it would literally be an F it game, because if you get that Xavier win, it does not matter how you perform against Villanova at that point, because you've done what you need
to do. Just come in, bombs away, just shoot threes all day, and hopefully maybe you shoot 50% and you get enough to win, right?
Right, exactly. You're playing without any – like, the first Villanova game had some pressure. Even if they lose to Xavier this week, I don't know that there's any real pressure to win that Nova game other than you just want to win, obviously. But
yeah, I mean, obviously you want to win because you put yourself in great shape. But, yeah, I agree with you. I definitely don't think the team is taking our attitude as far as it's okay if we lose both these games this week. I mean, this team is starving to go out and get a huge win and start to make a statement and say – the rest of the college basketball world, hey, we're here and we are coming to the tournament and we're going to beat a really good team and prove it. So that, I would hope, is their mindset, that they're going to – they're of that mindset. We're going to get two wins this week.
Yeah.
But, I think if I'm taking a step back, I think they're playing with house money this week. You take your best swing twice. Maybe you get one. Again, I'm going to project no, but I hope you're right, Phil. And they, you know, they get a win against Xavier, and then they just go toe to toe and make Villanova sweat on Sunday.
Yeah, the only thing that really, and I say this only partially tongue in cheek, the thing that worries me about the Xavier game is, I mean, a home game for Xavier, I'm sure we're going to be subject to a lot of Makura flops.
Well, yes, if not some fights.
Oh God, it's gonna. I'm going to love not having that guy in the league anymore, and I'm going to miss it just a little bit.
Yeah, I know, because when he trolls Wisconsin, he's like one of my favorite guys out there. Or when he trolls Cincinnati.
Yes.
I mean, it's pretty great. But,
oh, yeah. Against Seton Hall, he went back to the sleeves, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, J.P. Sleeves is back, so that's something to look forward to on Wednesday. Maybe he'll be rocking the sleeves. But there will be plenty of smack talk between him and Rousey on Wednesday, so I'm looking forward to that. And hopefully Marquette win. So, again, hopefully I'm wrong there. But, again, don't jump off the bandwagon. If you're just jumping on, don't jump back off if they lose both these games this week. It's going to be fine. Trust me. This is still a good team. Before we get out of here, I do want to touch on one thing again. I think second time in a few weeks, I've kind of wrapped up on a bit of a somber note, but if you haven't seen this, the Marquette women's team, the top transfer on the team, Tori McCoy, who you may know was an All-American in high school, transfer from Ohio State, she needs a kidney transplant. Not urgently, but eventually she's going to need one. She has a rare kidney disease. There is a GoFundMe set up for her, so if you have the means and can contribute, help her family out. At the time we're recording this, it actually is halfway to its goal, about $11,300 of a $25,000 goal. So great support from us so far, so kudos to all the Marquette fans who have contributed. And yes, for those wondering, this is on the up and up as far as NCAA eligibility. You're not jeopardizing her eligibility. This has been cleared through the NCAA that you can give money to her family to help her with the financial costs of this. If you're looking for it, go to Anonymous Eagle. They have a link on their page, the Marquette women's basketball site. Just go to gomarquette.com and go to the women's basketball page. There's a link there as well. If you want to read a little bit more about what she's dealing with and what the family's dealing with. So if you have the means, please help Tori McCoy, because I know her basketball career is kind of on the back burner now. I don't know exactly what her basketball future is, but, you know, when Marquette got her, they were just so excited because she would be joining that group of girls who are now juniors and will all be seniors next year. Marquette could be a really, really great team if McCoy's able to play next year. Again, I don't know what her athletic future means right now with this kidney disease, but wish the best to her. Hopefully she can get back to full health and get the kidney transplant she needs. I don't know what the timetable for that is, but again, if you have the means, there's a GoFundMe set up for her and her family. Check it again. Go to gomarquette.com, go to the women's basketball page, or Anonymous Eagle. They have an article up on their site as well where you can kind of click and go to the Tori McCoy donation account. So good luck to her and her family. I know that's a tough situation to deal with, but hopefully she can resume a normal life first and then maybe get back to basketball activities. So,
yeah, if she gets back to basketball, great. But the definitely the health and anything we can do to help would be the primary concern.
And again, the support's been great so far. Again, it's almost halfway to its goal as we're recording this. So who knows? I don't know what the timetable is to meet that goal, but fans have been great so far. Again, $11,000 raised already on a goal of $25,000. So doing well, and that's going to help the family a lot. So good for the fans who have helped out. Please continue to do so if you have the means. But again, we always thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. We appreciate your feedback as well. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Team handle is Crack Sidewalks. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. You can leave your comments. Please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. Leave nice comments. We appreciate that, and the 5-star reviews as well. And you can also go, we have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page, and you can follow us on there if that's your thing. Hey, Phil, so let's hope we're both wrong and we go 2-0 this week.
Oh, I man, it would be a podcast after that of just me screaming for like 30 minutes.
So tune in for that next week, Phil screaming for an entire 30, 45 minutes. Hopefully that's what happens. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everybody.
Poop knife.